الله أكبر الله أكبر.
Welcome to Let the Quran Speak. My name is Safiya, I'm your host. The aim of Let the Quran Speak is to help you gain deeper insights into Muslims and Islam, as it is practiced here and in other parts of the world. We have a special feature today, an interview with Dr. Altaf Hussain. He's a professor at the Howard University School of Social Work in Washington, D.C. Dr. Hussain will discuss the importance of community service. But before we get to that interview, we discuss adoption in Islam. Caring for orphans and neglected children is highly regarded in Islam, but many Muslims are reluctant to adopt. Why is that so? Does it have to do with Islam's emphasis on gender separation and on biological family ties? Is there anything that can be done to change attitudes towards adoption? Here with me to answer those questions, Dr. Shabir Ali, President of the Islamic Information Center. Dr. Shabir Ali, welcome to Let the Quran Speak.
Pleasure to be on.
Now, what does Islam say to begin with about taking care of orphans, taking care of children who are perhaps unwanted or neglected?
Well, the Quran lays great emphasis on taking care of children. And this goes back to the life of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, himself. He was an orphan. Quran makes reference to this by saying, "Alam yajidka yatiman fa'awa." Did he not find you? God found you as an orphan and took care of you. Of course, he was taken care of by his grandfather and then by his uncle, but the Quran puts it thus, that God took care of him. And the chapter in which this is mentioned, chapter al-Duha, then concludes by saying, "Fa'amal yatima fala taqhar." As for the orphan, do not treat the orphan harshly. And as for the one who is begging, do not repel them, and so on. So the Quran in this passage and many others emphasize that it's a very important part of being a Muslim that we do care for orphans and we look after the needy.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, in modern times, one of the ways that we take care of orphans is by adopting them. What do Muslims do? It seems like Muslims are not really interested in adopting children.
No one will give against the idea of fostering children. If we think of the word kafala as taking care of somebody, looking after their needs and so on at the physical level, then all of this would be welcome across the board. Adoption poses a particular question because of another historical incident in the life of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. He had adopted a man, I have to say, because the person he adopted was not a child at the time. Mm-hmm. He was only 10 years younger than the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, himself.
Okay.
And this adoption had a lot to do with the nature of life and the way in which people adopted at that time. Basically, he declared openly that this person is now his son. Tribes adopted people from other tribes and made them one of their own. This sometimes helped the tribe, made the tribe stronger. Usually adopted, or very often the adopted men, mm-hmm. to strengthen the tribe and provide one more warrior if needed. The adopted a person in this case would also be of some benefit to the adopting parent, and so on. But out of this incident, we have a further development in the life of the Prophet, peace be upon him, which is spoken about in the 33rd chapter of the Quran. And the way this was spoken of, just to get to the chase here, is that there are two distinct passages within that surah, one in the verses numbered 3 to 6, and the other in the verses numbered 33 to 40. In the verses numbered 3 to 6, that's at the beginning of the surah, it says that by adopting a child and giving them your name, you should not consider that they are your actual children, mm-hmm. because this legal fiction of giving them your own name does not change the biological fact of who they are and who you are. So you should call them by the names of their real fathers. And if you don't know the names of their real fathers, then you should refer to them as your defenders or guardians or protectors, or that you are their protector or guardian. Of course, it works both ways, because the person in his old age may adopt such a child or an adult to make that adult his son or daughter. With the expectation that in the old age of the adopting parent, this
we'll
adoptee will then take care of the aging parent. So it works both ways. So that's one reference there. One might look at this carefully and say that it doesn't actually prohibit adoption per se, but it only prohibits giving this false identity to the child. The other passage is in verses 33 to 40, where it says that Muhammad is not the father of any of your men, but he is the messenger of God and the seal of the prophets. That seems to be at least the that is the concluding verse, the verse number 40. So with that verse, it is understood by commentators that the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, had henceforth repudiated his former adoption of a certain man, Zayd bin Thabit, that we spoke about already. And they took this as a precedent, meaning that adoption is forever cancelled and not allowed in Islam. So we can foster, we can take care of a child, and we should, but the prevailing view seems to be that we're not allowed to adopt.
So this is recognized across the board amongst Muslim scholars that Muslims should not adopt?
This is widely acknowledged, at least at a theoretical level. At the practical level, we have new developments and thinking. A paper published about this from the American Society for Muslim Advancement shows that the matter is broader and deeper than just that superficial, simple pronouncement that adoption is not permissible. Because first of all, we have already acknowledged that kafala, or taking care of orphans, is the very Islamic thing to do. Adoption is one step further from that, where the child is taken in as part of the family and given every kind of facility that is normally afforded to the biological children in that family. But what this paper also recommends is that to deal with the fact that the Quran prevents this legal fiction of giving the false identity of the child, we can embrace what is referred to in modern times as open adoptions.
Which are increasing in popularity now.
Yes, and some psychological studies show that, in fact, this is better for the child. Open adoption differs from some traditional forms of adoption, or let's say closed adoptions, in that closed adoptions means that there is no contact between the two families, the family putting up the child for adoption and the family now adopting the child. And hence, there is no contact between the child and the child's biological parents. But in open adoptions, there is open communication. There is contact between the two families, and the child knows his or her biological parents and is free to contact the biological parents.
Yeah, I mean, there are gradations, right? Like, it's not...
It's not hard and fast. It's not absolutely this way or that way, but many gradations in between.
There's some relationship between the child and their biological parents.
Yes. So if we think of open adoptions, then this takes care of the Islamic caution against giving a false identity to the child, and it saves everyone from having to dissimulate and lie throughout a whole decade before the child, or 2 decades before the child actually comes to realize through clues that something here is amiss and I'm not really part of this family biologically, and then the child goes into a crisis and so on. So if a child is taken in the sense of an open adoption, then the child will eventually be let into the reality of this as much as the child could absorb in gradual doses, and the child can become aware that he or she is an adoptee.
Mm-hmm. Now, I guess another reason that some Muslims are reluctant to adopt is because there would have to be certain privacy restrictions and modesty rules between the grown adopted member and the family. of the opposite sex, family members of the opposite sex.
That should not prove to be a barrier to adoption on the whole. Families interact with each other within family situation at different levels. Not everyone maintains a very strict rule of covering within the family. But even more so, within Islamic law, there is scope for some flexibility in this regard. The important thing is to save people from falling into sin. And when people live together and grow up together with the strong sense of bond between brothers and sisters and parent and child, this itself creates the reluctance of anyone to get into any sort of sinful interaction with anyone else from within the family.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about inheritance? It seems like an adopted child cannot inherit from his or her parents, adopted parents.
In traditional Islamic law, this has been an issue, and to deal with this in a modern context, there is scope within the Islamic law again to allow, for example, a bequest to be made in favor of the adopted child. Some of one's charitable spending could actually be directed towards the child again in an open sort of adoption. And that takes care of the fact that the child will not be able to adopt to inherit from the adopting parent, mm-hmm. But of course the child will still be able to inherit from the his or her biological parents.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for your time, Brother Shabir.
You're welcome.
We'll take a break. When we return, we will go to an interview with Dr. Altaf Hussain, a professor in Washington, D.C.